Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 what's up, world? It's Badass Thugging like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
Yo, yo, check this out. This is your girl, Cola Vogue, and I'm chilling with my boys right here on Off the Cuff Radio. We off the cuff right now. You big?
What's up? It's your boy Lil Yop from UNLV, bragging up from the river, cooling with my homies and my family at Off the Cuff Radio. Y'all be sure to tune in on Fridays and get the latest scoop and find out what's happening. You wait me?
Tiffany Levine.
And this Queen Crazy, your girl, favorite bartender.
And we're from
Sex on the Rocks podcast.
Alright, you're now tuning in to Off the Cuff Radio.
Yeah, because they keep representing that world hip hop. Well, much love.
Alright.
Y'all, this is Miss Irresistible giving a shout out to the live show on Friday nights Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
Hey y'all, this is Stacey Lachey giving a shout out to King Eric and Off the Cuff Radio.
What's shaking, y'all? This is the Grand, one half of Lost Cause and one third of that Drive Time thing. Sending my love to the homies over at Off the Cuff Radio. Tune in every Friday night for some real deal hip-hop conversation. These dudes are the connoisseurs of this thing. You already know what it is. BX Stand Up, Hud City, what's shaking? Peace.
Yo, this is Joe Fresh Design, and y'all tuned in to the most raw, uncut show on radio. The Guillotine Scene, Off the Cuff, and yo, Eric Sandman, off of these clowns.
Cleopatra Jones.
And I'm chill like that. 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 I'm chill.
Blink.
Put your feet, cause they could be fat boys. Them dug the jams and commenced to going for. She swept the beats and asked me could she puff it. Me, I got crew kids, seven and a crescent. Us cause a buzz when a nickel bets a dope. Him, that's my man with the asteroid belt. They catch a fizz from the Mr. Doodle Pig. He rocks the teeth from the Crooklyn 9 Pig. The reverb the slick like my gangster stroll. The lyrics just like me coming back to rolls. You used to find the buzz in a box of fades. Now he boogies up your stage, plats twist the braids. And I'm peace like that. 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 I'm peace.
Check it out, man. I groove like that. I'm smooth like that. I jive like that. I roll like that.
Yeah, I'm thick like that. I stack like that. I'm down like that. I'm black like that.
Yo, I funk like that. I'm fat like that. I'm in like that cause I swing like that.
We jazz like that. We freak like that. We zoom like that. We out. We out. We out.
Sugar's on your block. The planets let them flash in the corners of New York. The ghetto, the meadow, the Mr. Butterflew. The honey bugs dug and licked the honeydew. The sun, the kiss, the funk for a bit. The lips with the soul and some jazz for your hips. The puff, the buzz, the lids be heavy slick. The mecca get a rush when the beats be very thick. The hands, the feet, the brown baby treat. The femmes fumble loose and drink the doodle juice. The steps, the flams, the planets got damp. The people get a grip with the tape from a jam. A nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk. A nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk. A nickel bag of funk.
Uh-huh. A nickel bag of funk. A nickel bag of funk. The big, the fat, the cool, cool cats. The psychedelic soul puts the planets on the map. The chic, the love, the far out name. The lack of the funk's the main. Why we came. The boogie gets done. The colors won't run. The funk hits the square. The kids gotta come. The pizza with the pop. The West Fourth stop. The crew after crew that do the grasshop. It's black, the new school is fat. The beats by the ounce, the funk by the pack. The groove is the fix, the jitterbug fix. The hanging off the butts with the fat soul kicks. That's my nickel bag of funk, my nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
I said a nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
Oh, a nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk. The wide, the hip, dig it, it's the trip. The loops, the scene, and the funkifying it. The sounds, the pounds, the stacks, the flares. The baggy, baggy jeans, the naughty, naughty hair. The twinkle in the eye, the kisses living fly. The crew from the sky, the stuff to get you high. The action, the work for the rhyme. We goes the whole nine. The papers won't rot, the vapors get got. The streets get the buzz, the funk off your block. The opium groove, the smacked out soul. The kicking it live, the fat gotta roll. With my nickel bag of funk, my nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk.
It's a nickel bag of funk, a nick bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
Nickel bag, a nickel bag. Ladybug will hit you with a nickel bag. A nickel bag, a nickel bag. Butterfly hit you with a nickel bag. A nickel bag, a nickel bag. Doodlebug will hit you with a nickel bag. A nickel bag, a nickel bag. DP's always hit you with a nickel bag.
yeah. Whole world. MC. Flip.
Level. 93 million miles above these devils. Play me in the winter, play me in the summer, play me in the order, any order. You want them, I got them, dripping like water. Catch me at a hot spot with the just order. We down here, moving within the true circle. We play these like you can. Straight New York shoe, we satisfy our wealth. From my new key in the bank, there's love amongst the banks. Now, I'm about to be my homegirl, cause we alike. A alike, C alike, let's be alike. Daddy joy,
the wheel.
Daddy joy.
And rap to the
I got the concrete under my feet. I got the shoddy right next to my body. I got the hood, no. Mountain street, just float on.
my back into flight, sat in Brooklyn. So I vibrate and shake them off like sleep. Electromagnetic radiation, radio waves, changing frequency. Here in NYC, we get busy. Naps and peas, street smart, no college degrees. Too many degrees of freeze, not faking fake snakes or bacon. Honey tips are shaking, it ain't no joke, so get your boy.
This our food, rule, what we do.
We make noise, 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 noise.
What's up?
With the dope rhyme that I kill.
Yeah. We was young bucks trying to get our bucks right. We was grinding, we was yawning, we was up nice. Graduated from the thug life. Need that foreign same color as Trump's wife. Presidential to risk, told me it's necessary. See, legendary is detrimental to bet against him. Just know we got the weapon forever is with him. White whip, white house, I just need a little whiskey. Always straight when I link with my people from Cali. Y'all niggas got talent, but we are the gifted. Free flow champagne every time that I spit it. Penthouse car lift, you know it's a ticket.
Pulled up to the dealer to get my wheels right. Homie asked me what color I like. I wanted cocaine white. I wanted cocaine white. He said half a milli, that's about right. Pulled out five cats, I'm shining up nice. Long as it's cocaine white.
Yeah. Y'all know what it is, man. Off the Cuff Radio, episode 390 in full effect. Sponsored by Buddy Boy Entertainment. Sponsored by Da Vinci Clothing. Sponsored by Jesse's Boutique and Core Financial. Had to show a little love to my man Hellraiser from Wu-Tang. He just dropped the movie on Rising. You need to go check that out so we can replay that joint. But nevertheless, man, we got a doubleheader on deck. And we got my host, co-host, T-Max with the facts in the building.
What it do, what it do. OTC, Friday night, we back at it once again, man. So it's another you know, chapter in the championship, you know, status of consummate communication and the ill profession of what we do, man. Shout out to our co-host, the Spell, all the fan man, Leech and Chilla. We here, man.
Yes, sir, man. And you know, our first guest of the night of episode 390. This he was a part of this trio here that was putting it down in the 90s. They were partly responsible for that culture shift when everybody was throw your guns in the air and shoot them up, bang bang. They brought that nice jazzy feel to the table and became very successful at it. Became Grammy nominated.
Definitely.
And that hit record, man, that they put out.
It was cool like that, man.
Yeah, it was cool like that. You hear it in commercials, video games, McDonald's commercials, wherever you're going to hear that, man. That's a representation of hip-hop and from what it is in its purest form. So without further ado, let's bring on my man, Doodlebug, a.k.a. C-Knowledge, y'all.
What up?
What's going on, family?
What's happening,
how you?
My man?
How you? Man, thanks for having me, bro.
No doubt, man. Yeah, my bad for getting at you a little late, man. I had that phone on charge, man. I had to make sure everything was off and running, you know what I mean?
It's all good. Shit happens, you know what I'm saying? We on now, so that's all that matters.
That's what it is, man. But what's been going on with you, man? So for people who have already been in tune with what you're doing and what you're up to, tell us what you got going on, man.
Yeah, right now I got a new project out, you know what I'm saying, called The Caladelphian. I released independently. It's available on my Bandcamp page, cknowledgepresents.bandcamp.com. 12 songs on there. It's available on CD, vinyl, and also digital. You know what I mean? I'm working on that. I'm also working on a comic book that I wrote along with my business partner, Thomas View. We're working on finishing up this comic book, and we also put together a podcast and a web series based on the comic book. And I got a Digable Planets. We're doing a live stream concert online May 15th. You know what I'm saying? We're going to be doing that May 15th from Seattle, Washington. People can buy their tickets now, though, if they're interested. You know what I'm saying? And check us out on May 15th.
Man, Doodlebug, the T-Max from VA, it's an honor and a privilege. It's been almost 30 years since you all dropped your debut. And like King said, the jazzy vibes, the butter smooth flow, the overall, you know, just bohemian nature of just that free thought association with your rhymes, man. It was something that you all bought an elixir for hip hop at that time in 92 that we didn't know we needed, but we loved the fact that we were able to absorb it. Did you all know from the onset how much of legends that you would end up becoming, you know, from there to now in terms of being so distinguished?
Man, nah, definitely did not think that. And I definitely didn't think no legendary status. You know what I'm saying? I don't consider myself no legend or anything like that. Just consider myself an artist trying to, you know what I'm saying, do his thing. Had a little bit of success, you know what I'm saying? But, yeah, it's a good feeling, man, you know what I'm saying, to do what you do and then have people receive it so well. You know what I'm saying? That's a great feeling, man.
Yeah, man. And one thing about it is that, you know, like King said, in terms of, you know, cool like that, you know, it's a unique ubiquitous now in terms of how it is so prevalent in pop culture everywhere. You know, you all came at a time in hip-hop where it wasn't corporate dominated. It was really about free expression. It was just about doing you in general in terms of the hip-hop that y'all chose to express yourselves in. A quick history, how did y'all come together in terms of making of the group, the process of the album, and then just watching it take off, and then, of course, you know, Reputation, New Place of Time and Space, and then, of course, you know, going to your second album, Blowout Comb. I mean, tell us about give us a brief history of that.
Yeah, man, we got together in the early 90s and got signed, luckily got signed to this new up-and-coming label called Pendulum Records, owned by Ruben Rodriguez. This A&R representative there named Dennis Wheeler, may he rest in peace. He saw something in our music, you know what I'm saying, that some other people just didn't. And he took a chance on us, you know what I'm saying, and convinced the rest of the cats of Pendulum Records to get down, you know what I'm saying. And we got in the studio with Shane Faber and Mike Mangini, who helped engineer the Tribe Called Quest Native Tongue Sound. They did a lot of the engineering for a lot of those albums and those projects.
Oh, wow.
So us being new cats in the industry, although we produced our own music, we needed somebody, you know what I'm saying, some mentors to help us, you know what I'm saying, because that was the first time we was ever really in like in a major, major studio situation, you know what I mean. Before that, we was recording in our crib or in somebody's basement or something like that, you know what I mean. So now we are finally in a major studio situation on a major label. So Mike Mangini and Shane Faber had a studio out in Jersey, in Bergen, New Jersey, North Bergen. And we would go there every day, Monday through Friday, in the summer of 92. And we recorded our album. And then we released the first single, I think it was October of 92. We birthed
right,
the slit cool
right.
Like that, and it just took off from there, man.
Man. And what did y'all learn about the business as y'all went along in terms of when you really started, you know, when the phone really started to catch fire in terms of, like, because you got to remember, but this is like, you all dropped in the fall of 92. So this is, of course, a huge drop. You know, I believe Lethal Injection came in 92. Of course, you know, some guy named, you know, from Compton, you know, I think you know him, his name's Dr. Dre. You know, he dropped this album called The Climate.
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah, that was a busy year. That was a busy year for hits, man. A lot of hits that year.
Yeah, I mean, EPMD dropped Business Never Personal. Redman drops What The Album. I mean, dude, y'all.
93 was a Blind 93 was a competitive year.
Yeah,
it was crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, y'all
Naughty by Nature
was
hot. Cypress Hill was blazing.
Yeah.
And they used to drain our pockets every week because it's like as soon as we had to save up more money to buy the next week, to buy the next album.
Hey, yo, for real. For real.
Definitely.
And you had
what
no choice. There was no stream. There was no streaming services back then. You had to buy that, John. You know what I mean?
Definitely. What did y'all learn about the business as y'all went along in terms of everything? Did you learn those lessons you learned in the business then to what you have taken into now?
Yeah, I mean, the things we learned back in those days is what, you know what I'm saying, enabled us to survive this long in the business and to be able to thrive now, you know what I'm saying, as businessmen. I mean, back then, we didn't know nothing about the business side. We were just creatives. We just knew how, you know what I'm saying? We was making music. We were artists. We didn't know too much about the business side. I mean, luckily, we had good management that kept us insulated from some of the bullshit, you know, the BS that might happen, you know what I'm saying? But we had to learn. We got some dings, you know what I'm saying, got some scars. We had to learn a couple of things during the course of our career that helped us, you know what I'm saying, to become who we are now, you know what I mean?
And, oh, editor's note on the show, man. Broadcaster's note. You can say whatever you like, man. You do not have to edit anything. You don't say bullshit, fuck.
All right. That's what's up. That's what the fuck is up. That's
free.
What the fuck is
all
up.
There we go.
I would have let y'all know,
like, as soon as they start cutting the monetizing checks, that's when we have to do the censoring. But, hey, we free will over here.
One thing, about when you're talking about you're going to do your comic, you also go under the name Creamy Spy Agent Du Togo, which you just happen to have the name of one of my all-time favorite anime characters. For those that don't know about Galgo 13, You need to watch
no
it.
Doubt.
I mean,
no doubt, you definitely need to watch it. That's what, that's one of my favorites too, and that's exactly why I made it one of my my monikers. You know what I'm saying? Because I love that cat. He was so cool. He was like the animated version of James Bond or something. You know, he was cool as a bug, man.
Dude, have you ever seen? Have you ever seen an animated series online? Have you ever watched the actual animated series?
Yeah, no doubt. Heck yeah.
Dude, I mean the joint, the episode about where they and we're just gonna get on our anime black nerd here because I mean, God, so, I mean, they, for those who don't know out there, basically Gargo 13 goes back to the 1970s of Japanimation. It's one of the oldest and the most famous out there. They actually, I believe, in Japan, I want to say in the 70s, early 80s, they actually released two live action movies. 1983, they released Gargo 13, The Professional. Of course, later on, they did Gargo 13, Queen Bee animation. But the animated series that was released in 2008, they did 50 episodes of it. I don't want certain platforms online to get in trouble because they may have it up there on copyright, but if you search on it online, you can find it out there. But Bug, that episode, though, I think it was the third episode. Remember that episode where that gun company hired those two assassins with those specialty weapons to try to take Gargo out in the desert? They came over that phony mission for him to go on, and it turned out he was in a race with a desert.
Yo.
And he, dude, and he
you got me hyped now. I'm going to have to go back and start watching this again, man. That was a good series. I haven't watched it in a long time, but that was a beast of a series right there. The movies and everything. I only saw one of them. I only saw The Professional. I didn't see the other one. Queen Bee, Johnny said. I didn't see
Queen Bee was dope. Check your DM after the show. It'll come from a guy named T-Max from VA. That's myself. I'm going to send you the song that I got from online. It's called Turquoise Blue. It was from the end of Queen Bee. I'll tell you one thing about those Japanese, man. Whether anime, whether music, because Turquoise Blue is just, it's just straight like a Japanese James Bond song, man. I mean, it's just the musicianship.
That's what's up. I want to hear that.
Yes, it is. It's unbelievable. I'm going to send you the link.
Wow.
If I can find
that
link of that movie, I'm going to send you the link for it. But Queen Bee was dope. Yeah, man. So, I mean,
Building about music, man, I'm going to tell you this straight up, man. One of my favorite albums was from 94 was the album, their second album was that Blowout album.
Yeah, thank you, brother. Thank you. That's what's up.
Yeah, because I like how y'all got really into more so militant steez, because considering what was going on at that time, the music was shifting, man. Was that the type of content that y'all was inspired to get into?
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? We always, that was always something a part of like who we were, you know what I'm saying? I felt like after the first album, the success of the first album, it emboldened us to start flexing our muscles and just doing what we wanted to do, because the label wanted us to like repeat, like they wanted us to give them some more cool like that songs, you know what I'm saying, some more hit songs, and we were on some other shit, you know what I'm saying, we toured a lot, you know what I'm saying, started really getting into the industry, start seeing the shark tank that it is, you know what I'm saying, and we, you know, and because of it hardened us, we became really, really adamant on the fact that we wanted to push out a black consciousness album, an album speaking on things that we wanted to speak about for our community and things like that, you know what I'm saying? We wanted to utilize our platform that we created off the first album and really do that, you know what I'm saying? It was a conscious effort to do that, you know what I'm saying? And luckily, our management helped fight the label, you know what I'm saying, and enabled us to do that, because the label definitely didn't want us to do that at first. It wasn't too happy about the Blowout comb at first.
Now, one thing about it, Bug, because you talk so glowingly and so lovingly of your management, which is a blessing from the Most High in itself, because you all were just, especially coming into the game, you had people that were in y'all corner from the beginning who really shared the vision that y'all had and encouraged it and enriched it, you know, in their business acumen and professional push. For artists out there today, how important is it to have that management that really believes in your vision and has your back, be thick and thin?
No, that's very important. That's a key element, is to have a team around you of people, like-minded individuals who believe in the vision, believe in the mission statement, you know what I'm saying, of the crew. And everybody has a skill set, hopefully, that people can identify. And then you utilize that skill set to make the crew, you know what I'm saying, thrive and do good. Everybody, you know what I'm saying, you ain't got to babysit nobody. You need a crew of motherfuckers, you know what I'm saying, that you know is going to handle their business. Nobody's going to be jealous of somebody else, you know what I'm saying, because there was always the time, you know what I'm saying, in rap groups where everybody wanted to be on stage. Everybody wanted to be in front of the mic, you know what I'm saying. Nobody wanted to do the grimy work behind the scenes, you know what I'm saying. And all of that is important work, you know what I'm saying. You can make a lot of money in all those pockets in the industry, you know what I'm saying, if you do your research and, you know what I'm saying, and network and all that type stuff, you know what I'm saying. So it's really important to have people around you that's about the business, you know what I'm saying. You're always going to have the friends is always going to be there. You just got to, if you're going to have your friends involved in your business, you just got to make sure that they're business minded too, you know what I'm saying. That's the key.
Definitely. One thing about it, and as you speak, Bug, in terms of the business aspect, Cool Like That is the most signature song of y'all. However, it's just another song in a long history of great songs you all have. But this goes into my next question about making sure that the business is right in terms of your publishing and, you know, royalty and everything. How great has that been for y'all from the business side in terms of almost 30 years later, in terms of still reaping other residuals, not only from a cultural icon perspective of respect, but monetary as well, that has enabled y'all to go into other endeavors?
Yes, it's been a blessing, man. It's real cool. You know what I'm saying? Like I said before, we learned a lot of lessons. You know, we made mistakes, but luckily we were able to bounce back from some of those mistakes and keep it moving. And nowadays, you know what I'm saying, we finally, at last 10, I guess about 10 years or so, we finally own our own publishing now. We got our publishing back, and we own all our publishing, and we've been utilizing it, doing stuff with it, you know what I'm saying, and licensing deals and stuff like that, keeping everybody, you know what I'm saying, and their families, trying to, you know, keep everything moving, you know what I mean. So that was a blessing that we was able to get our publishing and own that for the last decade or so. And we've just been trying to exploit it as, but you know what I'm saying, as much as best we can without, you know what I'm saying, being overly with it. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? We want to do classy stuff with it. Cause now that we own it, we can do whatever we want with it. People have to come to us and get approvals. You know what I'm saying? So that was cool.
How do you think the music has changed from where y'all started back in 92 to now?
Oh, man. I think it's the biggest thing is the internet. You know what I'm saying? It opened up smartphones, the internet, you know what I'm saying? Streaming services has changed the game a lot. You know what I'm saying? Whereas people were all about physical sales. Now it's all about streaming. You know what I'm saying? How many streams you got?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's some of the biggest changes, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's a good thing, seeing people owning their publishing, man, because it's sad to see when a lot of these big songs end up being in these big films and none of the artists getting compensated for it.
Yeah, that is true. That's true, man.
Stuff like that happens to
a lot of people. It happened to us, too. You gotta fight for your right, you know what I'm saying? And I hope get the right people around you to, you know what I'm saying, to push for it, you know what I'm saying? The right legal representation, right management, or whatever, you know what I'm saying?
Right. I mean, we'll keep the man, we'll keep this particular individual separate from his personal, well-documented personal troubles. I mean, the situation with R. Kelly. I remember when King and myself, we found out that day,
King, remember when I hit you and we were talking, and then when we found out that news about R. Kelly didn't even own his own publishing? I was like, and that was, I mean,
and his
that was wild.
His publishing is worth some guap right there. You know what I'm saying? His publishing ain't no joke.
Yeah, and it was crazy because when we think about all those songs he did, all those things that he wrote, and then we found out that Kells didn't even own his own music. And then, you know, of course, when they talk about, you know, how much money he had, or didn't have, rather, you know, because it's wild, Bug, because that era when y'all came in 92, hip-hop was still somewhat in the... It had made such a seismic impact over a period of, you could say, roughly about from 85 to 92. So we're looking about maybe what? Almost a period of like what? 7 years, you know, 7-8 years. And just the you know, just how things had changed so much. I mean, but when y'all came in, hip-hop was still in a very fundamental, it wasn't, the bling era hadn't come in yet. You know, so this is a situation where we're not really worried about the wealth, the ostentatious displays of opulence in videos. You know, it's just basically, you know, rough, rugged, and raw. You know, you all came at a time where the culture, dare I say, was just still pure at the time. And it still left, while the hardcore aesthetic was there, you all brought a very smoothed out, very bohemian, and very creative vibe that, while it wasn't the norm of what was being released, you all found a perfect fit for your brand of hip hop and found a new audience with it. I mean, just to think about it years later, what you all did, I don't think the hip hop community can thank y'all enough, you know, for what you all brought to the game. You know, you all just brought something totally new that would really, you know, when we think about a lot of rappers that would kind of come after that time, you know, Dred Scott, Breaking Combs, you know, Boogie Monster, yeah. And they had their songs, you know, Recognize Thresholds of, you know, Negative Stress.
Yeah, that was a dope song, too. I love that song.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they were our label mates.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I want to say Boogie Monster's from Richmond, Virginia, as a matter of fact. Am I correct?
Baltimore or something like that.
Baltimore. Okay.
I know one of the guys is from Baltimore.
Okay.
And I know they were on the same label as us back when they first came out.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, you know, if we go up to that Maryland D.C. area, VA Maryland D.C., you know, the Southern Tri-State, you know, we can't forget Question
yeah.
Mark Asylum. You know, when they drop
oh,
Hey Look
yeah.
Away.
That's my people's right there. Yeah, that's my people's Eddie Black and them.
Yeah, I mean, how did it feel, man, to where, you know, you all would end up, you know, bringing and allowing that door to open for so many other acts to come in? And then, you know, as the years grow and go, how Digable Planets would influence so many other artists down the line.
Yeah, it's just a natural, you know, that's the natural progression. I mean, because there were groups that did that same thing for us, you know what I'm saying, that opened the door for us, you know what I'm saying, with the things that they did and they accomplished and the music they made that inspired us. And then also at the same time, because of what they did, opened the door and allowed it for a group like us to come out, like groups like Native Tongues, you know what I'm saying, De La Soul, them cats, you know what I'm saying, Justice Sonic, you know what I mean, did things, you know what I'm saying, that allowed that jazz rap sound to, you know what I'm saying, to get some play, you know what I mean. And because of that, we were able to walk through the door and do what we do. And then after that, somebody came from behind us, and because of what we did, they were able to do what they do. And, you know what I'm saying, it just keeps moving like that. You know what I'm saying? That's how it's supposed to be.
Now, one thing about it, man, in terms of what you as a collective, you know, Butterfly, Ladybug, and yourself, now, this is something that now y'all dropped an undoubtedly classic album. And although they had been doing it for some years, you know, there was a group, you know, from Philly, you know, I think you heard of them, called The Roots. And then they would drop their album, Organics, you know, a year later in 93. So you all really kind of brought that neo hip hop vibe into the game, you know, collectively. I mean, I guess it's safe to say you all were ahead of your time in terms of what you all were bringing to the game.
Well, that's what's up. I appreciate that. I'll take that.
Definitely. Now, we got your view on in terms of how the, you know, in terms of the internet where the music has changed. Now, the content, how do you feel about the content and in terms of artists coming in now in reference to what, in terms of how artists just are coming in as opposed to how y'all and the rest of your contemporaries came in?
Well, we came in an era where it was all about, we came up in an era where it was all about originality. You know what I'm saying? Biters, no biters allowed. You know what I'm saying? If you bit somebody's style, you bit somebody's rhyme, you know what I'm saying? People would confront you over that. You know what I'm saying? It was a big thing. You know what I'm saying? Nobody, people didn't take that lightly back then. I mean, now people, everybody's copying everybody's sound and everybody's sound alike. And, I mean, not everybody. I don't want to sound like some old, bitter old man. You know what I'm saying? But
yeah,
I just think that we came up in an era where it was just a little different. Like the inspirations were different. You had originality. Everybody was in their own lane. You know what I'm saying? You had backpack rappers. You had party rappers. You had gangster rappers. And they all, and everybody was on the same bill in a show, or everybody was being played on the same radio show. Nowadays, it's all, the inspiration seems different. Like nowadays, it's all about getting money. So I mean, people was about getting money back then too. Don't sleep, but it just seems like nowadays it doesn't seem like people care about the Black Power or conscious movement. It's just like that to them. It's generally speaking, the mainstream sound of hip hop doesn't seem concerned with that. You know what I'm saying? And of course, there's underground rappers. I don't want to seem like these people don't exist because they do. But when you think of rap nowadays, the mainstream sound of it, it's more or less about money. You know what I'm saying? And everybody out trying to out-money each other. You know what I'm saying? And show just how much money they can act or talk about they have, or they can spend more than you or this. You know what I'm saying? People did that back then too, but it just wasn't as prevalent. You know what I'm saying? You had that, but then you also had, you'll have a song like that, and then the next song you have up your song about Dear Mama, some, you know what I'm saying? Then you'll have a song, you know what I'm saying? Public Enemy coming on there talking about Rebel Without a Pause, or, you know what I'm saying? Then you have a party, then you have Kid and Play coming in with a party song, you know what I'm saying? Last Night Changed It All, you know what I'm saying? But, and it all played together, you know what I'm saying? Like, now it don't seem the same to me.
Yeah, man. Yeah, once they, it's like this, man. If anything, what's crazy to me is, won't they realize that the more balanced the game is, the more money you make?
Yeah, that's true. That's very true, because it's hard to determine. Like, you could tell, like, back in the day, your favorite rappers, you could tell their voices. Like, as soon as you heard their voices on the radio, you knew exactly who that was. Exactly. Nowadays, these cats all sound alike to me. Like, they all got auto-tune. They all sing-songy. There's nothing wrong with that, but everybody don't need to sound like that. It seems like that's everybody hears. Like, they hear, when you hear something that's successful on the radio, oh, damn, I got to do that. I got to do a song like that so I can get on the radio, so I can get paid like that, or I can get a Cardi B to be my girlfriend or somebody, you know what I'm saying? Something like that. You know what I'm saying? It seems more like that, even though I'm pretty sure I'm oversimplifying the situation, you know what I'm saying? But that's just, for now and for this situation, for this platform, that's how I feel, man.
You know, you know, King and Bug, I think what we've seen, King and myself, we've talked on the air with hundreds of guests that we've had. We talked off the air about this in private conversations. One thing about it is, there was diversity. back in the game. We're going to say it again. This is before hip-hop got corporate, because we didn't start seeing that corporate influence really hit until maybe the late
90s. It was definitely prevalent in the early 90s, trust me. I would say the early 80s, like the groups like Rakim, when those cats came out, it was less corporate thing because the corporations didn't really recognize the full capacity of what it could do at that time in the 80s. Like Run-DMC was one of the few very corporate groups, Houdini. Like these groups, they were kind of like, they were one of the few. Most of the groups was on labels like IKEA, Profile. They were, like, these were all under, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, underground labels sitting in these little whack-ass little offices or in warehouses or something like that. Then in the 90s, and in the 90s, the early 90s is when it started getting more corporate, because we was part of a corporate, you know what I'm saying? We was on a small label, but it was distributed by EMI and, you know what I'm saying, Elektra. And that's when all those big companies was a part of it in the early 90s. That's when they really started getting involved. By the mid-90s, by the late 90s, they had taken over. It was done. It was a done deal by then. But the early 90s is when they started taking over. You know what I'm saying? That's when Interscopes and Elektras and the EMIs and all those cats started coming out of nowhere. You know what I'm saying? They started taking over.
Right. And I kind of meant to say that. From a perspective.
Yeah, I was going to say, too.
The dictation of how they wanted the direction of the culture. I guess that's what I wanted to say. When we started seeing the dictation, like when we started seeing the corporate influence where they started dictating where artists should go. But you're right. You know, when we started seeing, because I'm a heavy metal head, too, unavowed. Morbid Angel, one of my favorite bands, thrash death metal bands ever. They released their album Covenant. It was on Giant Records. And that was actually the first death metal album that was released on a major label. I'm trying to think who Giant was distributed by. I don't know if it was Sony or
Columbia. I can't remember either, but I remember Giant Records. Yep, I remember that label.
Yeah, because that's who Color Me Bad was, I believe, signed to as well. But it's like a big deal in the metal community. It was like a crowning achievement for metal music at the time, because especially for those guys, for them to be on a major label was like huge. An album was kick-ass. One of my all-time favorite death metal albums, released in 93. Yeah, man.
You can also keep in mind, man, 93 in that era, this was when Puffy was starting to come up. Biggie, he was starting to get his shiny suit. He was starting to develop his shiny suit era. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the corporation was in effect, man. It was in effect. Records, they was in effect in those days. That was when they really took over.
Because Puffy was working as an intern at Uptown Records, you know, with Andre Harrell. You know, we would talk about that all the time.
You didn't hear too much. You didn't hear about too many independent labels in the early 90s. When you did hear about one, it was like it stood out, like No Limit Records. They stood out because, like, everybody else was, like, trying to sign with a major label. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, it was just a wild time, man. You know, to just watch a lot of these artists just, you know, come along, you know, because also, too. Yeah, go ahead, King. Go ahead.
Yeah, plus I think what happened, too, is, and going by what we were saying earlier, one of the main reasons why you don't hear a lot of these people within the forefront of the mainstream really putting out them type of records is because their money is tied up in these corporations now. Now they got
they're getting
sponsor deals. They're getting sponsor deals that I ain't seen none of the rappers we had. I mean, they're getting yogurt deals, they're getting chewing gum deals, and
I never seen so many rappers taking chartered private planes in my life, they're giving away Bentleys for free, like somebody's giving them for free or something. Like, where are your Bentleys coming from? Every time I see somebody, one of those rappers, in their birthday party, they're giving their wife a Bentley or their 16-year-old a Bentley. Damn, this new era of rap has got, like, I ain't never seen so much money involved in it because it's part of the corporation, that corporate shit. That's all they want to promote. They're not going to promote no. If Public Enemy came out today, they probably have to be on an independent label. Or put it out theyself.
And you know what's wild, y'all? Because the fact is you know, when you look at the money, if we're going to break it down to brass tacks for a little bit in the money aspect, there were some artists, whether, you know, they was out there on the block or whether they was, like, when you look at EPMD, shout out to Eric and Parrish, they were their own producers. So they never needed the label's money. So they were able to handle all of that themselves. You got guys like Rakim, you know, who a lot of his personal history is shrouded in mystery, but from everybody you talk to, Rakim was, like, really, like, respected out there on the block. You know, guys like Kool G Rap, my favorite MC of all time. You know what I mean? You know, a lot of these dudes, you know, Ice-T, you know, shout out to, you know, Uncle Ice. I mean, you got these guys out there who were really, really, really out there, who really had money, but it was like, if you saw the change, you know, and everything, but it wasn't like, it was part of the fashion, but it wasn't like they were really trying to show what they had. It's like they weren't really trying to get over the top with it. Me and King, we were like young niggas growing up back then, you know, so we really didn't even know. We couldn't really understand, like, the significance of, like, you know, yes, Saint Laurent, you know, Gucci, you know, Louis Vuitton, you know, Burberry. Like, we really didn't even know what that was. You know, we were too young to really understand it. And now it's like, but when you started seeing the fashion change shift and, you know, more money came in, now everybody in a Bentley, dude. A Ferrari? I mean, what? I think a Ferrari 308B in the 80s, I think that car was going for, like, I want to say maybe $100,000 in the 80s. I think when the Testarossa dropped, I think the Testarossa was going for, like, maybe $110,000. And that was, like, that was serious back in the day. I mean, imagine a rapper in 89 whipping in a Testarossa.
Yeah, for real.
But then again, Sir Mix-a-Lot, he had that Lamborghini, you know, back in the day. So the Lamborghini Countach back in the day. So some of those dudes really did have it out there.
He was into real estate and stuff. So he had money.
Okay, I didn't know that. See, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, on Off the Cuff Radio, you always get that information that you didn't know, but you needed to know. Whether we give it or our guests give it. That's dope, man. And also, too, but you know, Bug and King, you know, there was also something Method Man said a few weeks ago where he just asked a plain question. Where are these new rappers getting all this money from? He's like, I can account for all the money I got, you know, from all the work I did.
Yo, for real.
He's like, where are they getting all this money from?
You know, for real, I'm just saying, I mean, every time I turn around, they fly private, and that's private flights, that shit is expensive as shit, son. That's not some cheap shit. You ain't going to be doing that every day. That's not something a regular person going to be doing every day, you know what I'm saying? Like, they always go on the plane, they always, like, super extravagant, like, doing shit like, you're like, wow, where is it? It is a lot of money. But like you said, I mean, the corporations taking over, you know, they took over pretty much the industry, you know what I'm saying? I mean, nowadays you got the internet opened it up to a lot of independents, but you still got to have money to make the shit work, you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, man. But check this, guys. We got the wrap up the first hour, man, but it was a pleasure having you on, man. I mean, you know, you still putting it down out there, and you got people still following up the movement. Those legendary albums are still on the rotation. So, do you care to tell anybody?
I had a good time talking to y'all, man.
Look, you know, definitely, this is man. Free, but we got to have you back on, man. We got to have you back.
No doubt, man. We had a good conversation. I liked it. And this COVID thing is totally over, man. At some point when we in the same city together, we got to chop it up. You know what I'm saying?
Man, we got to make it happen. Yeah.
No doubt.
Definitely.
All right, y'all. Thanks for having me, man.
Anytime, man.
Thanks for having me. Word. And hopefully I'll get on here next time with y'all again. We can talk it up again. You know what I'm saying?
Definitely,
man. You follow us on IG. So, yeah, man, we definitely connected.
All right, that's what's up. And send me that link. I wanna check out that Go-Go 13 movie, man.
Definitely. I'm going to send you the song. I'm going to go online right now and send it to you into your DM. So I'm about to get that now. All
right, that's what's up. I appreciate the allowing me to, man, be on your platform, man. You know what I'm saying? To talk with y'all, man. Y'all, man, cool, man.
Appreciate you so much, man.
Ain't no
thank
thing,
you.
Bro.
Thank you.
Well, appreciate y'all. Be safe, man. One love.
Definitely one love.
Peace,
God bless.
Brother.
Peace.
And don't forget, I'm going to get down, check it out, sessionslive.com/diggableplanet.
Boy, repeat definitely, it again because it kind of lost a reception. Never mind. Well, we're at hour number two, man, episode 391. We about to bring on our second guest of the hour right here. This cat is making quite wave with a single Gunpowder. I ain't going to lie, it's been catchy as hell. And he's here tonight to chop it up with us, talk about his new single, what he got going on currently in 2021, any tours, any new music, movies, whatever, man. So it's all welcome. Baby Soda on, y'all.
Jip.
Yo, what's happening, big homie?
What's going on,
what's
man?
Good, my brother?
Man, you know, I'm just cooling out this bitch, man. We in the A-Town, man, living life, man. What's happening?
Man, they eating good out there in the A, man. I mean, they ain't shutting down a damn thing. They like, what?
I think that's how niggas passing everybody else, man. We still get money, man.
They say ATL is like the Hollywood of the South right now, man. Matter of fact, everybody trying to move out there.
Well, if everybody start working for a year, and we got to keep working, shit, you know, it's going to show, you dig?
Definitely, man. So, I mean, it's a great to have you on the show, man. Tell us a bit about yourself, repping the A, and how you got into the game, man.
All right. Originally, I'm from Birmingham, Alabama, man, you know what I'm saying? Jumped out the porch,
okay.
You know what I'm saying, very, very early. And then, you know, we just, you know, my partners always was doing music. And one particular day, them folks called me up there, you know what I'm saying, bring them some. And they needed me to do, you know what I'm saying, like an ad lib or something, just to say something. They have a different voice on the ad lib. And I did it. I liked it. It was a hard song in the hood. And I decided I could do the shit myself. So, you know, I started rapping. Anyway, you know what I'm saying, as one thing led to another, I started getting in trouble and shit. I ended up I made a deal with the DA and joined the Army. And, you know, we kept doing music, man. And, you know, here we is, man. We just kept having fun, man. Kept living. Dodging the boxes like potholes in Jamaica. All
right, now, you say you're from Alabama originally. You Roll Tide or War Eagle?
Man, Roll Tide, man. That thing tatted on my arm, man.
Okay. SEC, look, y'all, yeah, man, look, we know about that athletic tradition y'all got down there going back to the days with Bear Bryant, Gene Stallings, Dennis Riddle, Jay Barker, Freddie Kitchens, Sean Alexander, Curtis Alexander, Tyrone Prothro, George T.
Alabama, you're
just going to leave Robert Horry out of there, right?
He said, what?
Oh,
yeah,
man,
yeah,
you can't do
Robert
Horry like that.
Yeah, Robert Horry basketball. Yeah, can't forget Robert.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I was just going about football, but yeah, y'all got a little. And, of course, shucks, man. I mean, y'all, look.
We're not gonna name the slew of number first-round draft pick currently playing in the NFL like Julio Jones and countless others.
Yeah. Yeah, shout out to what y'all done over the years. So what part of Alabama you come from originally? Bessemer, Mobile, Montgomery?
Ain't now one of the parts you named is Birmingham. but I'm from the east side of Birmingham, Center Point.
Okay.
Yeah, Birmingham, man. Baby.
Yeah, man.
Man, I got family roots out there in Birmingham too, man. I got a older brother that stay out there too. I mean, they keep it countryfied and they keep it solid out there.
Definitely.
It's definitely a spot you got to stand on what you say.
Definitely. Oh yeah. Before we keep going, we got also we can't forget Antonio McNice too. We can't forget him. You know, we said Robert, we can't forget that. Yeah, we can't forget him either. So yeah, man. So I mean, you know, once you got into the game, what was it like in terms of really finding your foot and in terms of really being able to, you know, put your, you know, style together to really make your name in the game, make your presence felt?
Being from Alabama, being from the country, is like, you know, gospel is a big thing in the city. So, you know, trying to incorporate, you know, the spiritual feeling that, you know, music gives us, you know, like devotional praise and worship. You know what I'm saying? Like, you want to capture the audience with just the feeling of the music, you know what I'm saying, from the, you know, the highs and the lows in our voice, you know what I'm saying, matched with, you know, the drum patterns, you know what I'm saying, and the highs and the lows in the beat. And if you can figure out how to do that together, man, you know what I'm saying, you just get magic. So, you know, when we able to do that in the music, you know what I'm saying, just by cooking people with catchy hooks and, you know, deep sounds, high pitch, you know what I'm saying, choruses and, you know what I'm saying, just strong choruses, you know what I'm saying, then we just give them a bunch of real shit in the verse, you know what I'm saying, just telling everybody exactly how the day-to-day life of a young kid from Birmingham, Alabama. Anyway, man, you put all this shit together, man. It's kind of, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of hypnotizing. People tend to gravitate to it.
And you know what's a trip, too? You know, what's a trip, too, is like when you listen to the West Coast, they brought that melody to the mix when Dre dropped the Chronic. And you guys, with Alabama, when it comes to Memphis, when it comes to Texas, when it comes to those hooks, man, they're like hypnotic, man. They like hypnotic and hypnotizing. So we're pretty much known for our hooks. So that's what I want to just acknowledge to the table for those who just tuning in and listening. Like, look, the South got something to say.
There you go.
Yeah, and you know one thing about it, man, you're following in tradition, you know, because, of course, you know, even though he's identified with Atlanta, a lot of people don't know that Gucci Mane was born in Bessemer, you know, you know, born and raised in Bessemer, Alabama, you know, before he ended up moving to Atlanta. And, of course, you can't forget Rich Boy, you know, from Alabama as well, you know. So, I mean, you all have a history, you know, laid down there. Pretty much as you went along, what was it like in terms of, you know, the process of making your music and really gaining fans along the way? Tell us about that process, you know, from, you know, your first, you know, your first song to your first performance.
You got like, all right, so coming up, you know, like, you only going to hear what your people want to listen to. So, you know, the older cats around me, they listen to a bunch of blues. And when they weren't listening to blues, it was Tupac, A-Ball, MJG, some UGK, you know, maybe some Master P. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, as I got older, you know, it was the Yo Gotti, Pastor Troy, T.I., Young Jeezy. You know what I'm saying? So being a kid from Belmont, I had, like, so many different influences in music. It wasn't until about maybe, like, 22, 23 years old when I was really able to find my own sound. I was so interested or thought I was cool just being able to imitate another rapper's style in my own words. But it still wasn't my own thing. So, like, the hardest part was being able to find my own sound. And once I found it, man, the people let me know that was the sound. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're just going to give these people high-power hooks and give them some rapid-fire verses talking some real shit. You know, Lil Wayne was a big part. Like, I wanted to give everybody a million punchlines per bar and everything else, a bunch of similes, a bunch of metaphors. But, like, being from where I'm from, man, people want to hear that real shit. Fuck all that read between the lines shit. They want to hear direct in my ear what the fuck you doing. Like, they want to believe you. And, you know, I think I was able to capture that. I was able to develop that and add that to my craft. And like I said, here we is.
And that's what the Southern region love to hear, man. They like to hear picture painting and, you know, people expressing through their records. So metaphors and stuff is cool. Like, you know, if you like the science behind rap music, but we just like hearing everything from the clear view and from that artist perspective.
Most definitely. I mean, so pretty much along the way, in terms of, as you, like you said, because down south, y'all very straightforward with it. In terms of, you know, delivery, in terms of the beats, it's just hard hitting, it's no frills, all uncut. When did you realize you were really beginning to get a name out there in terms of, like, people rocking with you?
Like, realizing it? I mean, I think I'm still realizing it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I always wanted to be mentioned with, you know, the Biggies and the Pops and the, you know what I'm saying, the, you know, the biggest people that I'm a fan of and the people that influenced me to do music. And I mean, I think everybody, even the people that the household names, I think we still seeking more and more, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if I'm there yet or not, you know what I'm saying? But I'm working like a motherfucker.
Definitely, man. And what do artists today need to, and what do artists, because obviously you're working, you're grinding, getting it, you know, how you live. What do artists need to understand in terms of the work ethic and the tenacity and dedication and tireless, you know, devotion to it to make it work? What would you tell artists out there today in terms of understanding what goes into this?
Man, listen, number one, go get you a bag. Find somebody with a bag. Invest with a bag. Find somebody to match your bag. You got to find a bag. It's all about it. It's too much money out here, especially in Atlanta. You know what I'm saying? Number one, you got to find some money. And then after you get some money, I think number two is social media. Social media rule the world. That's it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think the only reason the white boy was convicted was because of social media. Like, at the end of the day, man, everybody carrying the phone in their hand. You got to stay on that phone. You got to stay on social media, and you got to have some money to back it up.
And the way you were building your followers, and the way you was building your followers as well, you got to, if you care to tell people how much of a process and how much work that really is?
I mean, it's like the first level of Mario. You might lose a couple times, and after you beat that level, you got to get to the second board. You ain't beat the game yet, so that shit going to take twice as much time. So it's like, that's how social media was. Like, you know, at first we were just trying to get all our local people to follow us. Then we were doing shows, going on tours, getting people to follow us. I mean, you think, like, I just did a 4-month tour. I did, like, 50 shows. But in reality, maybe 10 people follow me from each show. But when you add it up at the end of 4 months, that's 500. You know what I'm saying? That means something. So, I mean, it's just like the streets, man. You know what I'm saying? It's gram for gram out here, man. Saying it's hard as hell to get. Too many rappers. You just got to be consistent.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Especially when the game is so oversaturated and everybody's trying to get in that feel. So you got to do, like, double to stand out.
Yeah, I mean, especially even if you're the hardest rapper, man, the reward gonna go to the hardest worker, man. That's just the game, man. If a motherfucker got a problem with that, they might need to just fall back and find something else to do. And this shit gonna go to the hardest worker, man. Like, it's an 18-year-old kid right now on Instagram. While I'm talking to y'all, he on SoundCloud and Instagram getting thousands of people to listen to his music, and we might not like it. You know what I'm saying? But shit, the people they sports to like it because he's so consistent. You know what I'm saying? It's a hard work gonna pay off in 2021.
Definitely, Yeah, you know, and one thing about it, is the fact that you can't substitute hard work. You know, one thing about it, while social media is a force, I think some artists get out there and they think that they just drop a video or they just drop a song and it's automatically supposed to just move. And it's like, no, it's not how that works. You know, you got to network, you got to talk to people. You really have to find a way to really connect with your audience to sustain the longevity, because making your entrance is one thing. It's about you staying in the building once you've gotten there and even renovating your own space in that building and having your own building once you have made it. You know, and I think that's something a lot of artists need to understand as well.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I mean, man, you said a mouthful, man. But at the end of the day, hey, man, the race gonna give it to the motherfucker that endured the longest and that worked the hardest, man. Ain't none of this shit given.
Definitely. So, are there any artists that you want to work with as you go on this journey and this process?
Of course. I mean, I want to work with everybody. I mean, like. Who would I not want to work with? You know what I'm saying? That'll be a shorter list. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to work with everybody. I mean, shit. They got any open Tupac verses over there at Death Row? I mean, shit, I want to work.
definitely, man. But, you know, it's one thing about it. That, you know, you I can sense the excitement and the passion, you know, in your voice, the enthusiasm, you know, the energy. It is all things positive in terms of really trying to interact. You know, some artists come in the game and they try to act like they're an island of independence, but the reality is you need to have a city collective that intersects with everybody. You know, the more people you can connect with and collaborate with, that brings a level of, you know, success, because that's how you spread yourself out. Yeah, but the fact that you're so, that you have a very sincere understanding of the business says a lot. How did you develop, you know, this understanding at such an early stage of your career?
I think because I started early. I mean, the first studio I ever recorded in, we was ran by Rough Pro Productions. Keith Ruff was one of B.B. King's bass players, you know what I'm saying? And I guess throughout the tradition of Alabama up to Memphis, like, I was just blessed to consistently have enough money to go to studios and, you know, just soak up game from certain individuals, you know what I'm saying, that I already had, you know what I'm saying, made headway in the game and did something. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, though, it was like, you know, enough discipline, you know what I'm saying, and enough bread, you know, you're gonna win some, you're gonna lose some, but you're gonna have some game at the end of the day. So I just say that I was blessed, I was humble enough to be around a lot of people that had a lot of game to give, and I just listened. You know what I'm saying? And then 1 + 1 = 2. You know what I'm saying? Like I was telling my boy Young Swag, my producer from Memphis, last night, like, you know, when you really understand the game and you understand the streets, it all starts to make sense. Like, I'd rather have, you know, what I said, I'd rather have 50% of 100 million than 100% of 10 million. Now, everybody got their own perspective of whether I'm right or I'm wrong, but 100% of 100 million is 50 million to me. So, everybody got to eat, and you can't do nothing by yourself. If you're talking about, you know, making some headway and really changing the game.
Now, with you coming from the mud and everything, man, do you find that it's more shiesty within the music business world versus you coming and dealing with the street aspect?
I mean, I wouldn't know. I'm not all the way in. You know what I'm saying? But, mm-hmm. I mean, it's all the streets. It's all the streets to me. Like, it makes sense. Like, you got cats that, I think Jay-Z even said it. You know what I'm saying? So he put $100 extra for his price on 100 brick, I mean on 1,000 brick, and if you did the math, that's $100,000. Now, I mean, mm-hmm. you got cats that understand that the slow grind is better than no grind. You feel me? You got cats that's going to put $1 million on everything, and eventually they're going to get squeezed out. And then you got the cats that's just going to run out. But in reality, the plug only respect consistency, man. And if you can able to, you know, stay consistent, set your market price up enough to be consistent and always, you know what I'm saying, able to come back on time, it's all a game. It's the same way in the music industry. Now, I ain't going to break it down in famous terms for everybody just to feel the game, but either you understand it or you don't.
It's to be sold, not to be told.
There you go.
Definitely. Now, in terms of your joint, you know, that's really, you know, doing numbers, the joint Gunpowder Smoking, which is just a hell of a title right there. I mean, that's just dope. Tell us a little bit about the work that into the creative process behind that song.
Usually, like, at that point in time, like, I usually write my raps on my phone because I'm always on the go. You know, but
right.
Certain records or certain times of the day, you know, I pull out the pen and the paper and just get back to the essence of it, and I just start to feel it. You know what I'm saying? And express my feelings through the ink on the piece of paper. You know, but
mm-hmm.
I was at a dark place in my life. You know what I'm saying? My big brother had just got killed, and the only thing I was just thinking, like, you know, we good?
Yeah, we good. Yeah, our condolences for your loss. Yeah, keep going.
Oh, my bad. But at the end of the day, you feel me, when he got killed, he had left his scrap on top of the refrigerator. And you know what I'm saying? So, you know, when I was feeling the beat, I was just saying, like if it's ever my time, I always said, like, man, like, if it's ever my time, number one, I do not want to be shot in the back. I want to look a nigga dead in his eyes. I want to look my killer in his eyes. That's one. And two, I just prayed it on scrapped up just to have a chance. I mean, I remember when I heard an interview with 50, and he was talking about when he got shot, he had the scrap, but he didn't have one in the head. So he, by the time he was about to cock that motherfucker, they already had the ups on. So it's pretty much
right.
Saying that I don't want the motherfucker to ever have the ups on me. Like, if I go, it got to go like some old Western shit, nigga. The clock strikes 12 and we both up on each other and let the best man win. I don't never want a motherfucker to have the ups on me.
But you know one thing, though, Soda, you know, but there's something 50 said in another interview about that, too. But he talked about it because, you know, the nigga may have got the drop on him, but he made sure that nigga went up to the sky because he said, and we can say this on the air on Off the Cuff because this has already been documented at certain levels. We know about, you know about the situation with him and Supreme. They aren't necessarily the best of friends.
Right.
But he said in the interview, he didn't name names, but he said the nigga that shot me is dead because the nigga that shot him ended up like, I think they found him dead like 2 weeks later. And he said the nigga that had me shot is in jail. So, you know, 50 still, they may have got a drop on him, but, you know, but whatever happened from the street level, there were some consequences and repercussions. They were permanent for the shooter, so, you know.
Oh, yeah, but at the end of the day, that man's still breathing because he just blessed, period. It wasn't
right.
Even in his control at that point. You know what I'm saying? So
that's
all
true.
I'm saying
that's
is,
true.
At the end of the day, man, I just want to be in somewhat control of my own death, man. You know what I'm saying? I just pray that I be scrapped up.
Yeah, man. I mean, that dude took
five. Yeah, you
got to
be on the offensive at the end because, you know, when you be on the defensive, man, it leaves you in a vulnerable state.
I mean, I think everybody in the streets that have participated to this shit consistently will participate in this shit consistently for a certain amount of time. Like, we all have had our own lessons and our close encounters with death. So, at the end of the day, I know it's a million niggas that, even the survivors that wish that they was just a little more on point, you know what I'm saying? And it could have went a whole nother way. So I got my pistol license anyway, by the way.
That is one of the great freedoms in this country that we are allowed, that we are privileged to have.
Self-defense.
Is the Second. Yes, I'm a full supporter of the Second Amendment. Yes, yes, full supporter of the Second Amendment. I said this on the show before. You know, I'm a full supporter of the Second. You've been out there on the block and you've seen the real soda in terms of what goes on out there. How do you feel about a lot of these rappers out here trying to talk about a life that they haven't lived, let alone really understand?
Man, listen. I hope y'all feel me on this. I'm not nobody to tell a motherfucker if they is or they ain't. You know what I'm saying? Like, to me, everybody's telling the truth. If one of y'all told me right now that y'all could fly a plane, I believe that you could fly a plane. You were an ex-pilot or whatever. My nigga could fly a plane. But should the plane ever be about to go down and the stewardess say, yo, we need a pilot. The pilot sleep. The pilot dead. The pilot had a stroke. Can anybody fly a plane? I'm going to look dead at one of you niggas and be like, man, can't you fly a plane? You know what I'm saying? And I'm be like, bitch, and the moment that you don't, that might be my ass. But you know what I'm saying? Like, that's you. You feel me? Like, you feel me? Like, I can't judge who is and who ain't. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know what I'm saying? The scariest nigga in the world might be the one to kill me. You know what I'm saying? God forbid, knock on wood. You feel me? I ain't talking about a bunch of death shit. I'm just saying that at the end of the day, like,
right,
man, who's to say if a motherfucker is serious or not? Like, how can another rapper say another rapper ain't did that? Now, rappers can argue about what part of the city they was from, and you ain't from this part, and you might not have did that on the day that I was with you, but it's like, man, come on, man. Like for real, I don't know what these niggas done did. But I do believe that the reward of the best album of the year and the best rap and all that shit, that goes to the one that tells the best story. Mm-hmm. And we would like to believe that the best storytellers are the one that's speaking from, you know, what they call it, firsthand, you know, experience. So, hey, man, just congratulations. If you can just tell good stories and talk that shit, you know, I mean, more power to you.
Also, I think it's also about show and prove, because just like that analogy that you use, like the same could be used for the rap. Like if they say, oh, I'm the best rapper in the game, you got to show and prove. Now, if you drop the ball, then, hey, that's the end right there.
Right.
You're going to do it to yourself. So, therefore, it's like, you don't really have to put that pressure on. That man got to apply it. That man got to show and prove and face that pressure on his own. If he drops the ball, then, hey, that's him. You know what I'm saying?
But I do believe that the streets speak a certain language. You know what I'm saying? So certain things a rapper can't say, me and my guys feel like, anyway, certain things a rapper can't say without having experienced it or done it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I love the kid Pooh Shiesty. He could be a liar, but I believe everything the kid say, because it sounds, he sound like us. He sound like he on the block. He sound like he right here with.
Yeah, and you know, and one thing about it, there's, you know, for those that have really been out there, there's a certain language of delivery that, you know, those that really are authentic, they really, really understand it, because there's certain intricacies and intimacies of the game that unless you will, if you haven't been in it, you're not really going to understand it. But if you've done it or you've been around it enough, there's certain lingos and language that is intrinsic to it that really, really, really expressed through song, you can really, really, you know, let people know, like, yeah, you know, this is my life to a degree. But, yeah, man, I mean, but pretty much from where you and a lot of times, too, you know, so I think sometimes artists got to understand that as you move from a level of the street to the business of music, you got to keep them separate. How do you feel about a lot of artists that at times do not keep their street shit and their music shit separate?
I mean, they intertwine, you know, quite often. You know what I'm saying? I try to keep it separated, you know, a million different ways. you know, but sometimes it just got across. Like, even with my social media, my team on me daily about posting stuff on social media, and I'd be like, man, y'all don't even want to know how I woke up this morning. I'm not going to incriminate myself on what the hell I did. You know what I'm saying? But to tell the truth, though, I'd probably be way, way out of here. I'd probably be one of the top artists in the nation if I show the world, you know what I'm saying, what we do on a daily. You know what I'm saying? I know without a doubt niggas would take me serious and just be all over my timeline looking for the next video that Baby Soda put out. If I show, I can walk in my house right now, you know what I'm saying, and you know what I'm saying, I'd probably go viral, but I'm not. I also got my family members, my little brothers around me that I know without a doubt, you know, they going to cut up whenever it's necessary. So when we go certain places, I don't bring them. You know what I'm saying? Not because I think they don't deserve to go, but they going to be them, and they going to do them, and they the best versions of themselves. You know what I'm saying? So I wouldn't put them in a situation where they couldn't be themselves. You see what I'm saying? So, I mean,
that's
for me, I'm gonna definitely try to separate the two the best I can. You know what I'm saying? But everything, you can't prevent everything. I mean, shit, I'm not a politician either. So if it goes, it goes.
I don't think we've ever had anybody on the show just break that down as you did, Soda, because that was real. You know, it's not just like you said. It's not that with members of your family or your entourage, you don't love them or care, but you got to know the situations in terms of people, depending on the situation. Because at the end of the day, you know what you have is a business, and while it's always great to have people to ride for you, you got to know how at times you got to have people. You got to understand when the situations, because sometimes it is going to come to the gun smoke. I mean, we all know that. But the point is, you want to keep the situation from coming to the gun smoke.
Right.
You know, you don't
exactly
want to have that. If it's not necessary, it shouldn't go there. But the level of which you speak and the modestness, because you know what you said just speaks volumes about the modesty you have. You already know you're authentic, so you don't need to have everything out there to really, so to speak, prove anything, because you don't have anything to prove to anybody. To thine self be true, and you know who you are as a man and what you stand for, and that's very much just something to respect.
Right. But I mean, you know, it's like I said, man, it's a bunch of game, though. Somebody had to tell me, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, you just shut the fuck up, man. Don't call shit to pay attention.
And one thing, you know, King and myself, you know, we've been blessed to interview people such as yourself, you know, met so many friends in the music industry, and and one thing about it is we know the ins and outs to the game, a lot of them, not all, but we know how the game is, and we're still students today, even being older. And we're always anxious to learn from those who have been there, because they've given us lessons that we have not experienced yet. So that's our education that is extended from the individuals that we engage with. And we're humble individuals about absorbing that academic from those individuals. And you got some artists out there that come in and think that they know it all. They don't have to listen to nobody. They got everything figured out. And the reality is, especially in the music game, you know, the music game is just a legitimized version of the hustling game that the streets have, you know.
It's a layer,
you know. Yeah, it is. Ultimately, so as you progress in your career, what do you ultimately want to do in terms of outside of music? What do you see yourself expanding on as you keep going?
Well, I wrote a script and did a trailer to Gunpowder Smoke, Smoking, as a movie, and you know, me and I just did it just to see if it was a good enough idea to go with. I knew that I had resources, but my team has resources, you know what I'm saying, of writers and directors to do certain things like that. So I was just, instead of sitting on my ass thinking about it, I actually did it. And it actually went very well. So we actually started writing. We do a writer's room this week, starting to work on the Gunpowder Smoking series.
That's dope, man. That's dope. Tell us about the creative process in terms of, you know, you writing rhymes versus writing a screenplay. Is it pretty much similar, or do you have a different type of framework when you set up from a, in terms of how you begin to compose, you know, those, you know, those stories?
It's definitely the framework. Like, I don't know if anybody that's listening, you know anything about creative writing, but, you know, creative writing for me, like when I wrote Gunpowder Smoking, I would make sure I hit certain points in my creative writing to say, okay, I want this. I want to visualize this. I want this. I want to see this. I want to speak about my brother. I want to speak about the car, the gun, the type of gun. You know what I'm saying? As far as, like, the writing the script and writing the movie was totally different. It was like it was like I was blessed because Kimberly Jones, you know, Kim has she's actually very, very into writing and music, and she has a New York Times bestseller. So when she started writing, when I called her and she was asking me questions about the script, she just went right into it, and she was like, "Well, this is the beginning, and this is the climax, and we need a plot twist, and we need this." And so when she walked me through the actual process of writing a movie, yeah, the framework is totally different. You know what I'm saying? But, I mean, at the end of the day, it's still our creative. But the creative writing process of making a list of words and things that I want to use in a rap is totally different from a movie.
I mean, so look, we got rappers. So we got rappers and screenwriter, like, man.
Gotta diversify your bonds, man.
Ah, yeah, man. When I saw Young Ice Cube in the NWA movie, like, you remember when he was writing the Friday movie and shit? Like, I mean, you got to think about it. It was in the movie, but at one point in time, the cat did stop rapping and sat down and wrote a movie.
Yeah.
Cold classic at that. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just come from the thoughts he had at sitting at the kitchen table. You know what I'm saying? Into something. So, I mean, yeah, of course, if I'm in the entertainment business, I'm able to see that opportunity. Yeah, I'm going to grab that motherfucker.
And Soda, that's wild, man, because, you know, a lot of times, you know, Cube is one of the greatest storytellers ever in hip-hop music. You know, he's one of the greatest since Steve. To me, if there has to be a Mount Rushmore of storytellers in hip-hop, it has to be Nas, Kool G Rap, Ice Cube, and Slick Rick. You know,
man, y'all really going to leave Andre 3000 out of – you really going to leave Andre 3000 out of the top three? That's crazy.
Well,
Scarface.
Well, yeah, I mean, we could definitely, if we want to extend it, you know, in terms of that, we could put them up there too, you know, in terms of, you know, in terms of writing.
3000 is top three of all time.
Yeah, we gonna have to have this for the probably debate show, man. Like,
we gonna have to Andre 3000 and Biggie Smalls are two of the greatest storytellers of all time.
No argument there. No argument.
I say Nas. I say Biggie, Nas, Andre 3000. But Nas, Biggie, Andre 3000.
Yeah.
Especially with Nas, when I ain't never heard a rapper do a song telling a story backwards. That's
yeah.
So you gotta give him number one. You give him number one for that. But nobody can tell a story quicker than Biggie Smalls though. Like in four bars, we done got out the car, killed the baby, got in the car, and got arrested in four bars.
Yeah, Big was ill with it. I will not argue with that ever. And Andre 3000, you know, I don't think we knew his true genius, because Andre has never been ass on the mic ever. He's always been awesome. But when we first listened to Southern Playalistic, he definitely said to play a shit. We heard AT Aliens, and this is no coincidence that he was with Erica at the time, and his shit went into the other outer stratosphere of creative. So, I mean, we're listening to some of the stuff Andre said, and we're like, where the hell did this nigga
Especially that Love Below album. That Love Below album, yeah. We started really seeing different layers of his creativity.
Yeah. I mean, that dude went
like, when he was
planet.
Talking about, but then when he said, true, I got another loop that lasts me to the end of the week, you know, I forgot, but he told a nigga, what he told a nigga, but we live tech to tech. So if you don't work, then I don't
man.
Eat. So
yeah.
We like neck to neck. Like, come on, man. That nigga's rich partner, man. Like,
I mean, when he kicked that on elevators, he said, that was an ill verse. He said, true. Like you said, he said, true, I have more fans than the average man, but not enough loot to last me to the end of the week. I live by the beat like you, just check to check. If it don't move your feet, then I don't eat. So we like neck and neck. See, what we done come from. We done come a long way like them slim-ass cigarettes from Virginia. It ain't going to stop, so we just going to continue. I mean.
And you see what's cold about him is, I remember him saying one time, like, yeah, I don't really rap like that no more, but I can write a verse that can crush your whole album. I believe it.
Yeah. Look, Soda, there's a reason why don't nobody come for Andre 3000 on the microphone. Because Andre is
there you
like,
go.
And I you know
when
what?
Nigga
but it's,
said, when that
but
nigga
it's wild,
said,
though,
when
man.
That nigga said, Peninsula maybe. Hey, I'm just going to leave it right there. He said, Peninsula maybe. Everybody went crazy. Like, who the fuck says Peninsula?
Man, look. You know, but it's wild, though, man, because imagine if some rapper gets foolhardy enough and outright stupid to try to insult him. I mean, can you imagine? Because we've never seen Andre angry on a microphone.
That's not
going to
happen ever.
Nah.
I wonder what
that's
Andre
not
going
like,
to
You see motherfuckers try Eminem before they try Andre 3000. Like, just think about
that
it. Like, that nigga said, I typed a text to a girl I used to see saying that I told the cutie pie with whom I want to be, and I apologize if this message gets you down, then I'd CC every girl that I'd CC round town. Nigga, a copy courtesy, nigga? Last time you CC the motherfucker, I don't remember last time I CC the nigga. Nigga, that shit's hard, nigga. That's bars, nigga. Like, that nigga's the greatest. Fuck that. But enough about under 3,000, man. Baby, sold on this motherfucker. What's good?
Man, you're a student of the game, man.
Let them know, like, do you have any, like, albums or mixtapes coming this summer? Because, you know, the summer's coming fast, and we need some fire, man. Streets are starving out here.
Well, we got the Gunpowder Smoking record going. We got the OnlyFans record with Jazzy Faye and Ugly Man and Nietzsche. That's already out there. You feel me? We got the Woe record. Produced by my producer, Young Swag, out of Memphis. Matter of fact, he got the number two on Moneybagg's new album that just dropped today. Swag got the second song on the album, you know, but he's doing my whole shit. So, you know, shout out my nigga Swag.
That's what's up.
And the album be called, well, I don't know if it's an album or a mixtape, man, but the project going to be called The Residue. You know what I'm saying? Where we scraped up all this game and finally giving it to y'all. So, you know, The Residue coming soon. Shit about to be crazy. And that single Woe is coming right out the Gunpowder Smoking. We took, you know, there's a homage to Black Rob, so we took Black Rob voice and put it in the Woe shit. Shit's crazy, though.
That's dope, man. One thing about it, we noticed that you're such a student of the game from all sides of the coast, man. I mean, how important is it for hip-hop culture to embrace and cherish their legends? I mean, we've lost three in 2 weeks. We've lost DMX, we've lost Black Rob, and most recently, last night, Shock G. How important is it for hip-hop to respect and really love the legends while they're here?
I mean, very important, man. I think the relationship between the young generation and the old generation I think it definitely need to be bridged. Now, my true opinion about it is, I think the old heads give the youngins, you know what I'm saying, the blues about what they're doing, you know what I'm saying, and how they're doing it. And, you know, respect is given, you know what I'm saying, and then respect is earned. So, I mean, but I always feel like, you know what I'm saying, to get respect, you have to give it, you know what I'm saying. So I feel like, number one, the old heads, the pioneers of the game have to definitely respect the youngins for what they do and how they're doing it and the creativity and the rawness of it. You know what I'm saying? I don't think that we're going to get anywhere by downing the youngins for their craft and how they do it. You know what I'm saying? That's just going to create more animosity. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, the metaphor I always gave was like, my granddad told my pop that the bell bottoms he was wearing was gay. And my pops told me that sagging my pants was gay. And I tell my little homies and my kids that them tight ass jeans they got on is gay. And I'm pretty sure the skinny jeans generations gonna tell the next generation and their kids that whatever they wearing at that time is gay. But in reality,
that's just
a generational curse about it. That somebody got to break. And I think it's the responsibility of the older generation to just pay more homage and let the youngins do what they do. I mean, you ain't here to raise them. You don't give a fuck about them, you know what I'm saying, how they eat during the day. You just care about the message that they're giving. But let's just be real. Like, who really thought that hip-hop was going to get smarter? Like, hip-hop was only going to get more and more raw. I mean, NWA and Cube had a lot to say. At the end of the day, man, you ain't going to get too much intelligence from fuck the police. And it's only going to get more and more watered down this generation. So I don't think niggas is going to get smarter. Of course, we're going to have our backpack rap and some lyrical rappers, you know what I'm saying, talking about what's really going on, you know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, the masses are moved by what's going on in the streets. And that's just going to be the most raw motherfuckers. And the story ain't going to get better told it from nobody but a motherfucker that's there every day.
That's real.
Man, that's
real talk, man. And, you know, and building off of that, see, even with what we do with our show, it's like we're not really the grumpy old man type, because we still keep our ear to what's going on. And if anything, that keeps you current, that keeps your mind sharp, because you don't want to be stuck back in 94.
I mean, but but it's like when I think it was Crazy Bone, not Crazy Bone. I think it was Busy Bone that had something to say to the Migos when Offset said they were the best group ever. I mean, that's that man right. Like, you gotta feel like you the best ever. You know what I'm saying? So you can't be upset with that man for saying that we the best ever. Like, he got that chip on your shoulder. You in the rap game. This is blood sport. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I understand him saying that. I understand it not being everybody's favorite thing for him to say or have said. But at the end of the day, like, come on, man. Like, and when you look at and when you think about it, the only thing that he could bring up in his defense, because he wasn't going for the man. Then when the man got upset with him, let's think about it. If anybody gets upset with you and they got a few choice words for you, then let's be realistic. What else can you say? You're going to defend yourself. So Offset just brought up the money. And we done made way more money than y'all. Was he right or wrong? Who knows if he was right or wrong? But still, he threw a punch.
True, true.
That's true.
Yeah, I was gonna say, as we end on that note,
because we run it short on time. But what we're gonna do is after we get off the phone, we're gonna play your joint, Gunpowder. Let them know what time it is, man. And do you care to let people know where to find you on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, so that way we can keep that bird soaring in the sky?
Hey, man, it's Baby Soda. @_BabySoda on Instagram, Baby Soda on Spotify, Baby Soda on YouTube, Baby Soda on SoundCloud, man, wherever you can go get some music, man, this Baby Soda, man, you know what I'm saying? BabySoda.com, whole log in, man. Please save the baby. Let's do it.
Definitely.
Let them know, man. Let them know, man. And check this, man. We have an episode 400 coming up probably in about 2 weeks maybe, 2 or 3 weeks maybe. So definitely feel free to pull up, man. Who knows? We probably could dialogue about that greatest rapper or the top three.
Storyteller, because the greatest rappers, we're going to sit here all day with that shit.
That's going to be like a Royal Rumble. We debating on that. So we gotta break it down on the categories. But definitely, man, we appreciate you joining us, man. It was fun. It was fun building with you. And we going to keep supporting you doing what you do best. And we're going to play this song from you. So keep doing what you're doing, my brother. You got Off the Cuff Radio support.
Already, man. I appreciate it, home.
Appreciate you so much being on.
Oh, yeah,
on,
big
brother,
shout out.
Man.
A big shout out to Angela for making this happen as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Angela, you know, Angela held me together, man. Angela makes sure I'm always where I'm supposed to be at the right time.
Man, shout out to Ace, Lady AC, man. She be with it, man. So on that note, shouts to Doodlebug and Baby Soda, our guest tonight. Of course, King, the head of all things hip-hop, myself, T-Max, our loyal listeners. We love y'all so much. And on that note, we out.
All righty.
All right.
When they come for me, just hope that I be ready. I just pray that I be strapped up in a Chevy. Gun powder smoking. I find it hard to stay alive. Ain't nobody got a ride. I got murder on my mind. Gun powder smoking. It's gonna be a homicide. I can't swallow all this pride. I'ma put it on the line. Gun powder smoking. So when they come for me, just hope that I be ready. I just pray that I be strapped up in the Chevy. Gun powder smoking. 400 block off in the engine. If they hit me, I'm gonna fight it, bitch, up like it's Armageddon. Gun powder smoking. The niggas, I just want the money. Face card gravy. I'm a 100, bust back, nigga, get the dump it. Crack back and never see it coming. Damn, don't put the cheese on him. He put the beam on him. He was a rat, saying he had the juice, so they put the squeeze on him. I'm in the zone, don't get picked, homie. Call me the big homie, go get your bitch. I'm getting rich, homes, and don't get pissed on. Nigga, I'm getting pissed off. Well, really not mad at all, I just want pass the ball. Buy the coke, cook the coke, cut it. Saran wrap it, ship it out to buddy. Let's blast on him, go put the mask on. Gave you a pass, homes, man up. Don't get mad, homes, go get that cash, homes. Crack baby, go to my leg baby. I'm just a black baby, late 80s. I'm pushing back baby, I'm spitting back baby. So when they come for me, just hope that I be ready. I just pray that I be strapped up in a Chevy. 400 block off in the engine. If they hit me, I'm gon' fight it, bitch, up like it's Armageddon. Gun powder smoking. I find it hard to stay alive. Ain't nobody got a ride. I got murder on my mind. Gun powder smoking. It's gon' be a homicide. I can't swallow all this pride. I'ma put it on the line. Gun powder smoking. Drinking to Arizona, smoking on California. Roll on her. I put the pole on her, send her to Oklahoma. I pop it on her, smelling like 1 million. The bitch love my aroma. Boss on her, you grab a card on her, I'ma go hard on her. I'm moving fast on her, how about the Jag on her? Light work, moving the whole thing. Figure the dope game, okay. Go make some more plays and go get a four-way. Fight first, niggas ain't playing that. See, that was the old days. I ain't gotta say that I got it. Never had a chance to go to college, but daddy made a man out of me, and mama had to pray about it. Made a lot of sacrifices. Mama worked the third shift. My brother love watching Martin, and I watch birds flip. Young nigga, learning the recipe, saving the residue, a trap in the residence. You running for cover, I'm running for president. Duck down, a lot of shit I ain't said. My niggas ain't scared, face head. Look at the dough rise, then we'll break bread. So when they come for me, just hope that I be ready. I just pray that I be strapped up in a Chevy. 400 block off in the engine. If they hit me, I'm gon' fight it, bitch, up like it's Armageddon. Gun powder smoking. I find it hard to stay alive. Ain't nobody got a ride. I got murder on my mind. Gun powder smoking. It's gon' be a homicide. I can't swallow all this pride. I'ma put it on the line. Gun powder smoking.
gun, gun powder smoking.